Hi, everybody. My name is Linda. I'm an alcoholic from Detroit, Michigan. Hey, glad to see everybody here this afternoon. I'm so glad to see everybody in this room this afternoon. And at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, who is Lynn Elms. Lynn is from Colorado, and I gave your last name. I'm sorry. Lynn from Colorado Springs. Hi, my name is Lynn. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And it's a privilege to be here, and I'm very grateful that I can today. I want to thank a loving God and the Friday Women's Group of Colorado Springs for my sobriety. What are you suggesting? Oh, okay. Because of the loving God and the Friday Women's Group of Colorado Springs, I've been sober since March 23rd, 1988, and I'm very grateful for that. Our book tells us that we should share a little bit of our experience, strength, and hope, and that our stories are somewhat similar. And so I'm going to just do that. Each of us only has 10 minutes, and I don't know, some of us can talk all day. I'm one of those, so I'm going to share the condensed version with you. I was very much wanted when I came in this world. Both my parents wanted me, and I was the firstborn, and by the time I was born, they had become financially very comfortable. And so we lived in a fancy part of town in Long Beach, California, and I grew up loved and wanted. And 2 years later, they had a boy, and that's my brother, and he was wanted too. And I am a child who turned 50 this year, along with a whole lot of the rest of us. I understand there's one every 8 seconds in the year 2000. And so they had me slightly after World War II ended, and along their journey, they started drinking from the time they were teenagers. And so I was a child that was later in life for them, not that late, but my mom was in her mid-30s. And actually, they both were alcoholics. Now, I remember that it didn't get bad until I was about 5. But between the ages of 5 and 9, it got bad enough, even in our fancy part of town, that the police came on a regular basis, and that they went from having a whole lot of money to not having any. And their alcoholism really progressed. And when I was 9, my brother and I went to live with my mother's sister. And a few months later, my mother, on her third attempt, was successful in committing suicide. So, and I knew what alcoholism was. My brother and I, he's 2 years younger, so by the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I didn't necessarily call it alcoholism all the time, but we knew when they started to drink that they would fight and that it wouldn't be pretty and that we might have to call my Aunt Laura to come get me. And we knew it was the booze. So after we went to live with her when I was 9, it was like a new life. My mom, like I said, died later that year. Actually, she died in the month that later on I got sober in. But it was like a new life for both of us. And my dad did not quit drinking then. He ended up truly losing everything, and he's one of those people that for a period of time ended up on Skid Row. And I said, as maybe just one or two of you in here also said, that will never happen to me. I'm different. I'm smarter. And whatever else I thought it was, so that I wouldn't be an alcoholic. So I was scared of alcohol as a teenager. And I do know we have a very short time here. So I was scared of alcohol, and I didn't want to be an alcoholic. But, you know, I didn't have a choice about that, as long as I decided to pick up a drink. And I didn't actually drink until after high school. I was in a pretty much a goody two-shoes in high school. It was kind of sickening. And, you know, and I got good grades and all that stuff. But now, today, looking back, I realized that when I did start to drink at 20, I got drunk, you know, when I finally discovered alcohol. And for me, at that point in time when I discovered alcohol, it did feel still a hole. I did start to feel then like I belonged with you guys. I could laugh more. Life had been real serious, and it wasn't fun. It was something you needed to do, and you needed to get good grades, and you needed to be a leader, and you needed to be successful, you know, all that stuff. And so alcohol helped me laugh. And it helped me feel a part of. And but it was very interesting for me, because I really only drank and partied for two or three years before I started thinking, or that little knot started inside my stomach, that something is wrong with how I'm drinking. There was a part of me that just knew. And I want you to know I didn't get sober then. I was about 23 when I went to this first meeting of women, and it wasn't even Alcoholics Anonymous, because I sure didn't want to go there. And but I just couldn't believe I was really an alcoholic. And so, skipping ahead, I spent 15 years from the time I was 23 to the time I was 38 arguing with myself about whether or not I was an alcoholic. By the time I was 38, I'd been in and out of this program, our program, that I never wanted to be a part of, for 8 years. And denial and being too smart will kill you if you're not careful, if you're an alcoholic. And so finally, however, for me, even though I'd had a spiritual experience in around 30, it is God led me to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. And at the end, the last 2 years were really bad, and I want you to know they weren't really bad on the outside, they were really bad on the inside. And so I'm one of those people that actually I'm real outgoing, and I, you know, take charge and do all that stuff. And and that last 2 years, the way I heard it once said, and it fit for me, was it's like I got into one of those barrels that they'll put over Niagara Falls, that people used to go in and they'd throw those barrels over Niagara Falls, and I climbed in one of them. And in that last 2 years after I climbed in, then I put a little lid on top, and there was, you know, some breathing room. But it just got smaller and smaller and smaller. So finally, when it hurt bad enough, when the pain was bad enough, I started following the directions of some of those wonderful women at Friday women's meeting, and they told me to pray for surrender, and I did that. And I need you to know that all I wanted when I finally did that was to not have to drink anymore. That's all I wanted. And again, my outside life didn't look so bad. I still had a job. I was on a second marriage, but it was an okay marriage, and I'm still married to that okay guy today. But all I really wanted was to not have to get up at 2 in the morning and get a drink. Because for a couple of years, I'd woken up somewhere between 1 and 4 in the morning and needed to get a drink. So, once I got sober, I had no idea that that was the beginning of the rest of my life, which I'm very grateful for today. I love life today. I'm here. I fully participate almost all the time, except when I'm taking a nap. Because I'm getting older, and somehow I just don't have the stamina I used to have. But can't believe that's happening to me, you know. But I love life today. And I don't know whether it's a choice or a gift, but what I want to share with you is that I do think that what we hear about that glass half full or half empty is true. And that we can look at almost anything that happens, and we can look at the good parts of it or the bad parts of it. And again, I don't know if it's a choice, a learned thing I've done, or whether it's a gift, but usually I look at the good parts of whatever it is. along the way, as I was growing up, there was a family that I came to know, an older couple. And they liked me when I was a teenager, which is hard to believe. And I ended up marrying their daughter. They have an older daughter, 5 years older than me. She had married this guy. They divorced. I ended up marrying this guy that had been their son-in-law. So this couple with the grandparents was my stepchildren. It's like Dallas. I hope you guys are following this. So these people, they're 79 years old. They'll be 80 in the next couple of months. And they're in Houston, and I maintained this wonderful relationship with them most of my life. They have been good friends and are a part of, I've been married now a second time for 17 years to this really good guy. And Jean and Roy have been a part of us for all these years. So they're kind of like the parents I never had. They're kind of like grandparents. They're kind of like in-laws. I don't know what we call them. And this last year, they both got really, really sick in different ways. And Roy's not probably going to be with us by the end of this year. And Jean's probably not going to remember who I am by the end of this year. So before I came to Atlanta, I went down and visited them in Houston. And the point of this is looking at whether the glass is half full or half empty. If they hadn't walked through this stuff with me, and if they hadn't loved me, I wouldn't have this experience of knowing them and loving them. And it hurts right now a lot that you know, odds are that relationship with them is ending this year. And so even though there's pain, and there's pain and sadness in this, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to have been loved by them and to have loved them. So I want to share that and then end with this poem, which some of you may have heard. It's kind of real popular on the internet right now. Somebody sent it to me a couple of weeks ago. And for me, I'm trying to tie this into the joy of living, because it's how we look at life. And today, mostly I love life, even the hard parts. So it says, and it's either entitled Blessings or Thankful For or something like that. It says, I'm thankful for the mess to clean up after a party because it means I've been surrounded by friends. I'm thankful for the taxes I pay because it means I'm employed. I'm thankful for the clothes that fit a little too snug because it means I have enough to eat. I'm thankful for my shadow who watches me work because it means I'm out in the sunshine. The spot I find at the far end of the parking lot because it means I'm capable of walking. I'm thankful for all of the complaining I hear about our government because it means we have freedom of speech. I'm thankful that the lady behind me in church who sings off key, I'm thankful for her because it means I can hear. The piles of laundry and ironing because it means my loved ones are nearby. The lawn that needs mowing, windows that need cleaning, and gutters that need fixing because it means I have a home. I'm thankful for my huge heating bill because it means I am warm. I'm thankful for my weariness and aching muscles at the end of the day because it means I've been productive. And I'm thankful for the alarm that goes off early in the morning hours because it means I'm alive. And I'm thankful for Alcoholics Anonymous because of you and my God and my Friday Women's Group, I'm sober today and I'm happy that I'm alive today.
Thank you very much, Lynn. Our next speaker is Carolyn B. from St. Paul, Minnesota.
I'm Carolyn Bingham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I'm so happy to be here. This panel is supposed to be about the 12th step, and so I decided, well, you know, I've heard of the 12th step once or twice. My sobriety date, by the way, is July the 16th, 1974. So, you know, I thought, well, I'll probably know about the 12th step, but then I thought, nope, I'm going to sit down and study. So this morning, I took out my 12 and 12 and my big book, and I read about the 12th step. And as usual, I found that they've inserted stuff Since the last time I read it, they've been putting stuff in. There's this really interesting part of the 12th step that I'm sure it's really always been there, but it has never sprung to my attention until today. It says something like, after we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, if we go on growing our attitudes and actions towards security, emotional security and financial security, commence to change profoundly. And then it goes into the usual shtick about some, you know, how we demanded that life adjust itself to our requirements, and we demanded that those around us care for us as if we're small children, and that they allow us to romp through their lives as if we were small children, even though we were full-grown, although not very mature adults. And it says now we don't have to do that anymore. So, you know, the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, and it comes at the end of the first 11, the assumption is that a person has worked the first 11 steps to the best of their ability. And the end result is supposed to be an individual who is capable of some degree of self-responsibility. What we're supposed to be growing here is a grown-up. And, you know, I looked at these words and I thought, well, yes. You know, the changes in my life in the 25 years that I have been sober have been so phenomenal that I could keep you here till tomorrow morning, except your butt would get tired. At the end of my drinking, I should qualify myself to be speaking as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was literally, totally incapacitated by drinking. I was on the verge of dying. I could not, when I first came into recovery, I could not count past 10 and retain the information. I had lost my right-left hand coordination. I had lost the sensation in the ends of my fingers. My liver was in, I was in liver, fa- I mean, I was a, I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I burned the toast. I was dying of alcoholism, and there was no other interpretation to put upon my condition. And it's 25 years later, and I am now an active participant in life. I go to a women's meeting every Monday night, and I am there on Monday night unless I am sick in bed or out of town. And if either one of those is the case, somebody knows that I'm not going to be there, and they know why. There's a young woman who's recently started coming to this meeting, and she is very tiny physically, and she is so fragile emotionally that I just want to pick her up in my arms and carry her. And, you know, so I've been trying to just to be as loving as I possibly can toward her because she is just so fragile. I have the feeling that if I were to breathe too hard, she might just fly into 40 pieces, you know? And we were leaving in the elevator the other night, and we were alone in the elevator. She said, you know something, Carolyn? I said, no, what? Her name is also Carolyn. She said, I've been around AA for 8 years now, and I've gone to a lot of meetings, and I've seen a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous since I've been coming. But she said, and from the time that I started coming to AA, they told me that there were certain people around the program who glowed. And until I met you, I have never seen anyone who glows. But she said, you have it. You have the AA glow. And I was just so, I almost broke into tears in the elevator when she said this. I think this is one of the nicest things that anybody ever said to me, because it is purely a result of giving myself to this simple program with all the earnestness at my command. I have also one more thing. You know, the 12th step is about carrying the message. And in these days of computers, it should not surprise anyone that Alcoholics Anonymous is now available on computers. If you are online and are unaware of the availability of AA meetings online, I have put a bunch of these little cards over there on that chair by the door. The URL for the online intergroup association of Alcoholics Anonymous is on the back of this card, and it contains a meeting directory of online AA meetings. So if you're interested, please help yourself. I'm trying to age gracefully. And there may be times when I won't be able to drive to my meeting because I'm getting blind and scared to drive on the ice. But I will always have AA on my computer. And you can too. Thank you.
Two wonderful messages from two wonderful ladies. Our third speaker is Cheryl W. from Decatur, Georgia.
My name is Cheryl, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am a member of Division for You Women's Group that meets in Virginia Highlands here in Atlanta. And I've been with them for the last 7 years since I moved to this wonderful city that we're meeting in this weekend. You know, before I came into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't think I ever used the words living and joy in the same sentence. It was very tough being the person that I was. You know, it was an excuse for a long time to drink, because if you were like me, you would drink too. And I really did not know joy in my life. I looked at other friends, people at school I really admired or was jealous of, and I thought, you know, why can't I get that for me? And I had no idea that it was going to take 18 years of drinking and drugging to finally get me there, but it finally happened. When I got here for the last time and have stayed to date in 1988, I had a lot of those yips happen to me because I'd been here a couple times before. And it was just really hard to give up wanting to drink more than anything else in my life. But when I got here in 88, I was ready. And I'm so grateful for it today, you know. It was the bottom that I needed, and I really had lost my job. I had been unemployed for a year. I had been evicted from my home. My car had been repossessed. My one and only daughter was ready to run away from home, and God picked me up and put me back in the rooms with y'all. And I was ready to be loved. And to me, that's what AA is. And, you know, when I come into AA and I see another woman who's hurting, and I know where she's been, and I know that there's hope for her too, that's just what makes my world go round. And I always love that song, Love Makes the World Go Round. And, you know, for me, it's AA makes the world go round. And without it, you know, I don't think that my life would have ever had any meaning. And so I'm a firm believer, because I had a black belt sponsor who put me right into service probably in the second week that I knew her. And that was just not because she was thinking so much about service, but I needed to go to a meeting, and that's where we went, to an institutional meeting. And that's where I really found my voice. The first time I came into AA, I sat around the rooms and I listened to all the wonderful things that y'all said, and I thought, you know, I can come here and I can learn how to communicate with other people. And, you know, I wasn't thinking too much about staying sober, but I thought I could learn to communicate. So as I came back the last time, I still was not able to voice my feelings. I really didn't even know what was going on inside me. But sitting in this group of psychiatric patients every week who didn't have a lot to say, but if they said anything, you didn't understand much of it anyway, you know, I just felt free to run off at the mouth and say anything that was coming to mind. Plus, every week I was able to read how it worked, and that helped a lot, you know, to kind of get used to the sound of my voice. So, many, many months we went to those meetings, and I learned a lot of lessons there, you know, about letting people be, and if they wanted to crosstalk in the meeting, or if they wanted to talk back to me while I was speaking or whatever, I just had to let it go, because, you know, we were at their meeting and it wasn't the standard kind, the kind that I was used to. So it was a real learning tool. And then I got a lesson in anonymity one night after my home group in Columbia. We went over to the Shoney's in my parents' neighborhood, and I was here with a group of AA people, and I felt very safe and comfortable, and we were all checking out at the cash register, and this guy who had been at the psychiatric hospital for several times I had been out there, he runs up and goes, "I know you, you're that heroin addict," you know. And I was just mortified. I was like, "Oh dear God," you know, and I looked around and I realized that everybody standing there loved me. And not a one of them was going to have a judgmental feeling about, you know, any information that was revealed. And that also God was hard to swallow for a while, but then I learned that, you know, some of my greatest lessons come in those hard to swallow moments. But we've been working on this convention here for 2.5 years, and, you know, all along we were told that it was all about staying sober, that we had to do whatever it took on a day-to-day basis to ensure our sobriety. And to me, that's what 12-step work has always been. That lots of times when a sponsee's coming over and I'd rather sit down with a Coke and, you know, West Wing, or I would rather go shopping or just be alone, you know, I always spend an hour with that person, and it's amazing how much better I feel. You know, even when I go to a meeting, you know, I always leave feeling better. And so it's one of those things that I have to continually trust that, you know, although, well, I certainly just don't know what's good for me. And that's why I'm here, you know. And so every time that there's something that calls upon my time, I have to trust that, you know, it's not going to be the drudgery that I expect it to be. And that generally it's going to be like a bouquet of flowers or an unexpected rainbow in my life. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be of service to other people. I think I came into this world thinking I was an accident. I had heard somewhere along the lines my parents never wanted children, and, you know, all along I was just walking around cowering that somebody was going to just snatch me up and take me away. And today, you know, I see how God is using me. And I know that by giving it back to you is how I keep it. And that is one of the messages that I need to keep reminding myself of, and the people that I sponsor. We had a really good workshop this morning on sponsorship, and we were talking about what you say to people who say, "I don't have time, I'm not interested, I don't want to get involved." And, you know, being able to keep what I have by giving it away, it's like one of those magical phrases. It's like, "Oh, yes, well, I want to do service. Yes, I'll do it," you know. And I think that that works a lot with people. And I would like to end with this one little, it was like a cartoon that we were given this morning, and I thought it just exemplified 12-step work so much. And there was this penguin on the back that I can't show you, but the little thing under him was, it says, "I can't expect others to listen to my advice and ignore my example." So y'all keep coming back.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. You know, I'm so excited about AA that I keep doing. Anything anybody asks me to do, I'm always doing. That's why I ended up being chairperson. And I was a little nervous. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. I hadn't really been on a panel before, but I've given hundreds of open talks in the Metro Detroit area and in Canada. And one of my sisters came in and said, "Oh, don't worry, it's not a big thing. I'll show you what to do." And she brought me up here and showed me this booklet, and it has all the directions in it, so there was no need for me to be afraid. But anyhow, I was very moved by the first three speakers that we had, and our fourth speaker is Jan W. from Norcross. George.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jan Worthington, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here and been asked to be on this panel. Are y'all real excited about what's going on this weekend? Yes. Say it louder. Oh, yay. Okay. I've heard a lot of stories so far, and my experiences prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I can say ditto. You know, I've been there, done that, got a t-shirt, you know. Bottom line is, I drank until I could not drink anymore. And it wasn't about that there was more booze out there, but emotionally I was bottomed out. And I came into the program February 9th, 1986. And I just celebrated 14 years, and that is by God's grace and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and people like you showing me how to walk the walk. And I did not do this perfectly. And if you're new in here and you're not on the 12th step, it's okay, because there's a lot of good things in that 12th step that you can practice in your life just to have a better quality of life. And the things that we can do for other people. By the time, you know, and the steps are in order, because there are principles behind each step. And we have to study them to know them and to know what the principles are so we can do it. You know, and I did some part of my sobriety, I kind of thought it would happen by osmosis. It doesn't. It does not. But by the time we get to the 12 steps, we've learned that we are a part, one of many in our world, that we are an intimate of this world, and and that's great, because we've learned that it's not all about self. It's about giving. There's one of the things in the 12 step in our 12 and 12, and it simply says, freely ye have received, freely give, is the core part of step 12. And it truly is. It's about giving. Whenever we can give, the more we will receive. You can't imagine just how powerful it is, unless you've been there, and I know you have. I know a lot of you have been there. And if you haven't, do it. Because I'll tell you, I'm a member of the Atlanta Biscayne Room in Chamblee. And Maggie Harrison is my sponsor and has been for 14 years. And I'm very grateful for her, because you talk about, you want a sponsor. Don't get somebody that's got their first year, because, you know, you need somebody that has the backbone to teach you how. Somebody that's got experience to share with you what's worked for them and has worked for a lot of other people. So I would recommend that you get somebody that you don't have to really think they're your best buddy. Sometimes it's better not, because they're going to tell it like it is. You know, because I don't need somebody just to tell me what I want to hear, because I tell myself that enough, you know. And, you know, when I do that, I get sicker and I stay in the problem. And we're here to get into the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous and live a happily and useful life. And that is what these steps offer us. There are so many ways to give of ourselves. And my favorite poem that we have in the 12 and 12 is the St. Francis Prayer, because it gives us so many things that we can use to be happily and whole and free and to be able to give. And I know many of you have heard it, but it's just like I want to share it today, because I'm like, I always need to be reminded of things, because I got a big forgetter. So the prayer of St. Francis: Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console. To understand, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is by giving that we receive. It is by pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in dying that we are born to eternal life. It tells it all, doesn't it? You know, if we practice these principles in our lives, we can expel the obsession to drink and make us usefully and happily whole. I want you to do something for me. I want you all to stand up and reach to your partner beside you. Hold up your arms like this. Everybody linked up? Okay. Look to your right and look to your left. Would you help the man or the person next to you if they were in need? You can have a seat now. God bless you all and thank you. Thank you very much, Jan. While Jan was speaking, I was sitting there thinking about the joy of living. And I thought about my sister, who asked me one time, she said, well, what do those people do at those meetings? She said, do they cry a lot? I said, sometimes. And she said, how can you stand going there listening to all those sad stories? And I said, you know what? I said, any meeting that I go to, there is so much joy in the room that it's unbelievable. It's almost overwhelming at times. You can see the joy of living in the faces of the members at the meetings that you go to. But she still thinks that because you're an alcoholic that you have to be sad all the time. I told her, I said, well, when I was practicing, when I used alcohol, I was sad all the time. I was very sad. And I'm too much of a coward, I think, to commit suicide. But I used to be so depressed and so just down in this deep, dark hole. I was afraid to live. I was afraid to die. And I never thought that living could be as good as it is today. My sobriety date is September 20th, 1988. And I am truly honored to have been chosen to be a chairperson of the Joy of Living panel. I was thinking, I remember hearing a man say one time, you stop getting high to do what? And I sat there and I thought about that for a minute. I wanted to change my life. I was really tired of being a scared little girl and not knowing what I was afraid of. I went through from a little girl to an adult and was always in fear of the unknown, always afraid to take a chance, always afraid of opportunities, afraid of successes, I was afraid of everything. I was afraid to speak. If someone had told me 25, 30 years ago, I would be standing at a microphone talking about my strengths, experiences, and hopes, I probably would have said, oh, you're lying. I couldn't do anything like that. But if any of you are brand new in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you are so blessed. You are so blessed. One of the ladies mentioned that a lot of people come to AA for a lot of reasons. I've heard all kinds of reasons. But the thing that's truly wonderful to me is the fact the people who stay that get sober, they eventually find out why they're coming to AA, and they get sober. And if you ever watched a plant, you know, I watched some I call people who've been around for a while, the glow. You certainly see the glow. Call them little buds. When they come in, they're like a little bud. And then just to watch those people bloom and flower into wonderful human beings is an experience that you just can't get anywhere else. It's just really powerful to see the benefit of staying in this in the Alcoholics Anonymous program, staying sober a day at a time. I do everything I can. I love women. I used to despise women. When I used to hang out in those clubs, I never hung out with women. I women were my enemy. You guys were the enemies because you were the competition for that man, you know. And today I don't have to do that. I can hug my sisters and truly mean I love you when I say I love you, because I really do. It's just been a wonderful, uplifting experience to be on the that train. To, you know, going through the daily things of life, and not to say that I don't have ups and downs, like we don't, you know, we all have ups and downs, but I can deal with the challenges of life today. I switched careers since I've been in AA, went back to school and got my master's degree as a result of practicing the 12 principles in my daily life. It's so important. So many things have happened to me, so many blessings as a result of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I remember when I first came in and I finally had, you know how you I can tell new women when they come in, new people period, they come in with their heads all down, like all down in their necks like turtles or something. And the longer they stay, you see the head come up and up. And I tell people, you know, look at people when you're speaking to them, look them in the eye. And it's just a feeling that I had when I first came in. I just wanted to just get on the rooftop and just shout to everybody. I wanted everybody to know that I was an AA, and I was, you know, I finally knew what was wrong with me. I was an alcoholic. I didn't know all those years. And I was almost 30 before I started drinking. But I had the ism long before I picked up that drink. You know, but I really appreciate you ladies coming in here this afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to be the chairperson. And I would like to thank my the four speakers on the panel that were so gracious and so animated in their giving and sharing. Thank you very much.